going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball.
On 670 The Score.
No crying.
If you want to be a real good front office in Major League Baseball, you got to stay woke. You have to. Because the game evolves, it keeps changing, it moves quick. Sort of like Ferris Bueller, life moves fast. If you're gonna, what's the quote? See, now I don't remember. Damn it. Life moves pretty fast. If you're gonna.
If you don't stop sometimes, you might just miss it.
Might just miss it. Thank you very much.
I was trying to let you get it. Yeah, I knew you were gonna get it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And actually, it doesn't fit what I want to talk about at all. Let's rewind the whole thing. Can you start the music again?
I'll do it again.
Ready? Here we go. 3, 2, and 1. Welcome back here on Hit and Run here on 670 The Score. I'm Matt Spiegel, your host. Coming up in 1 hour, Doug Glanville will join us. Before that, Bruce Levine with the scene setter from the ballpark. But I wanted to touch on this. If you are an MLB front office and you want to be good, you want to stay good, you got to stay woke. The game changes. The game evolves, and you can't let it pass you by. Fascinating article in The Athletic this past week because they polled 40 different baseball coaches and executives. 40 different MLB executives and coaches were polled by Tyler Kepner of The Athletic, obviously formerly The New York Times, now of The Athletic of The New York Times, to find the best front offices in MLB. And the results are in, and there are incredible examples and quotes about how the smartest baseball organizations do things. And I know you're immediately wondering, oh, where are the Cubs in that? Because when they went and got Theo Epstein and they gave Theo all the power and he executed a near perfect 5-year rebuild that culminated in a World Series, the thought was, oh, now the Cubs are right there at the top. And I'm sure they would have been very close to the top in any of these rankings should they have existed in 2015, 2016, 2017, probably even 18, towards 19. Now, not so much. So, but here's the top 20. Number one is, of course, the Dodgers. You know, 230 different first place vote points, 70 other vote points. So anyway, you don't have to worry about that, but just trust me, nobody has anywhere near the number of first place vote points as the Dodgers. The only team near them is Tampa with the Rays, and third on that is the Guardians. The Brewers are actually third because they got a lot of other points, and then the Yankees are fifth. So that's your top five. Dodgers, Rays, Brewers, Guardians, Yankees. And I want to go through some of the why. The write-up with the Dodgers, and there's some incredible quotes here from like a National League general manager about this. they do 100 extraordinary things to win all the time. You don't just become a behemoth without doing that. They build players' value. They build the team in different ways. And now they have the financial platform to do seemingly whatever they want. So it's clear what they've done. It's Andrew Friedman from the Rays using their methodology with unlimited money. But look what else they do. They just constantly draft and develop. So they always have prospects that they can move away for things they want. And sometimes they have prospects they move away for other stuff. Here's an example. Michael Busch, who's killing it right now for the Cubs and taking a big step forward, wasn't going to play for them. So they trade him away for the young pitcher Jackson Ferris and for the kid Zaire Hope, who they absolutely love. And Zaire Hope could very easily be flipped for something they need at the deadline. Or they could hold on to him and let some money go and let the kid play. But it's that ability to turn prospects into assets and to capitalize on those assets very, very well. That makes the Dodgers number one. The Rays are number two in these rankings. And what's really interesting is that the way that their continuity that they have all through the organization helps withstand the constant roster churn. I hadn't realized this. Kevin Cash has been there at this point forever. So Eric Neander and his staff have all been there a really long time. So, and that continuity is a big, big factor in what helps them do their thing. Cash is in his 11th year. The pitching coach and the hitting coach have worked together for 8 seasons. How about that? Think about that. So it's not just a director of hitting, a director of pitching at an organizational level. It's the actual hitting coach and the pitching coach who have been there and been a part of things for this long. No other team has had the same people in those roles for that long. That was interesting. For a team like that, that's constantly bringing up their kids and then needing them to continue doing what they learned in the minors on the big league level, essentially their directors are there. Think about the difference between that and a guy like Matt Shaw who gets instruction in the minors and they don't catch along the way that, oh, it could be the leg kick. I don't think it's that. Could be the pigeon toe. I don't think it's that. It could be his head moving like crazy while he's at the plate. I think it's that. And nobody caught that. Nobody caught that at AAA on the way up? And then nobody caught it in the spring? And now they're sending him back down to AAA to work on stuff? Who's going to work on it with him there? He's already been at that level. I'm concerned. Anyway, the Rays don't have those kind of issues. So that was interesting. Another thing the Rays do, they are decisive early on their guys and on their trade targets. They make decisions early. They realize the value of a player is high early in their minor league careers. They make a very quick decision on whether or not that guy is going to actually move through the system or not. They stick to their guns. Anyway, this article in The Athletic is an awesome read. I'll move through it a little faster, but I want you to hear what all these other orgs do. The Brewers are ranked third, and they are talked about as the small market gold standard. And there's a very interesting thing that comes up in here, and they talk about how they, after David Stearns and Craig Council left, they promoted Matt Arnold, Pat Murphy, and they haven't missed a beat. Organization's culture has carried itself. But how about this, that the Brewers have shifted. They used to be a team that tried to shoehorn a bunch of guys who hit for power and didn't really have a defensive position, and they won that way, to now they're like the most athletic team on the field, and they're winning that way. When you think about it, think about those young Brewers players and how athletic they are. Jackson Churio and Sal Frelick and all those guys. So it's a different way. They've shifted on the fly, and it is still working. So that makes you wonder which one Council prefers, the athletic team or the power guys that are just kind of squeezed in. Maybe a little of both, because the Cubs right now have more athleticism than they do the other, frankly. But so that's interesting. Cleveland is number four, where Carter Hawkins comes from. It is talked about as the finishing school for executive talent, because the guy, Chris Antonetti, is in charge. He's in his 27th season in the organization. 27 years. And the quotes, one American League GM says, everyone respects the way Chris sees the baseball world, his ability to cultivate staff and have people want to work for him. So, look, you see a lot of people who have been spun off of Cleveland and go other places. They really care about people there, says one National League GM. I think that allows them to compete and to hang on to a lot of talent, both on the field and off. Number five is the Yankees. And yes, some of you Yankee fans have been texting in. Brian Cashman's actually really damn good at his job. And here's the thing about Cashman that doesn't get enough credit. While they spend a lot and they get a lot of big money free agents, they do front office analytics really well, says an American League GM. They take guys in the middle rounds of the draft, optimize the hell out of them, and then spin them off for guys like Devin Williams. They consistently have enough talent in the system to go fill their major league needs every year. That's an awesome quote. And that's part of what an organization has to do. All right, so there's your top five. Where are the Cubs? Nowhere just yet. Number six is the Atlanta Braves. The Braves, we know, lock up their guys. They've also dropped a little bit in the standings, but they lock up all their guys long term, as we know. And they draft a bunch of real good players below round one. They've also accessed high-end players in trades like Matt Olson, Sean Murphy, and then they extend them too. Interesting. Trade for a guy and extend him. Interesting. Like that idea. Sounds good. So the Braves are six, tied with the Philadelphia Phillies, where I've always given credit to Dave Dombrowski as a guy who chases owners who are willing to spend along the way, whether it was in Detroit or whether it was in Montreal or in Florida. Like he chases and he times it out well with owners. But there's this one added in. A rival GM says, when's the last time Dave Dombrowski got burned on a young prospect? It just doesn't happen. And then I'm sitting here thinking, well, Ben Brown? What if Ben Brown turns into something real good for half a season of David Robertson? That one looks like a win for the Cubs right now. So moving on, number eight is the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks and what Mike Hazen has done there, really, really good. They've had some misses in free agency, but they've also made a lot of really good deals in free agency. And they have signed up a lot of their own dudes for long-term deals before free agency. Corbin Carroll, Geraldo Perdomo. How does that guy look right now? Ketel Marte just signed him again. And Arizona is an underrated front office. Number nine is the Orioles. Baltimore, one of the few organizations that really excel in both pitching and hitting development. That's the way the Orioles are discussed. Okay, so they're at number nine. I'd like to see them lock up guys to really, you know, continue this thing, sign some of these guys to long deals, spend some money on free agent pitchers so you can maximize what they have, but they're not doing it so far. Okay. And then we get to number 10, which is the organization that I'm in love with, and that's the San Diego Padres. I love what A.J. Preller does. And before I talk about that, I'll tell you what the Athletic and the survey folks said about the Padres, that they always draft well, and they do well internationally, so they always have prospects to trade. They seem to be deep enough in prospects. And the thought is, well, this isn't sustainable what they're doing, but they're sustaining it right now. And what I love about them is this. They shed money when they need to and then add it again. They are aggressive. They shed salary. They're aggressive with prospects, and then they recoup with prospects. There is a lot to be said, in my opinion, for the flexibility that A.J. Preller shows. And I'll give you this example. Let's go get Juan Soto from Washington. You know what they gave up for Juan Soto? Mackenzie Gore leads the majors in strikeouts. James Wood, who's absolutely killing it in left field. C.J. Abrams, who had a breakout year last year before he went gambling at the Rosemont Casino late night and got suspended. But anyway, and there's more pieces than that. But so they had enough prospects to go get Juan Soto and compete with Juan Soto. Gore and Wood and Abrams. That's a big haul that they gave up from a stocked farm system to go get Juan Soto. But then before they just let Soto expire when they knew they weren't going to send him, they trade Soto away to the Yankees. For what? Drew Thorpe and Michael King. Michael King, see what Michael King just threw a complete game shutout a week ago today. Did he go again before since then? Maybe. But Michael King is not good, is great, was great for them in the playoffs last year, and so far this year has been really, really good. So Michael King. And I mentioned Drew Thorpe was in that trade. So they trade a haul for Soto. Then they get another haul from the Yankees for Soto. And then Michael King from that trade is basically their ace or one of their aces. And Drew Thorpe, who they got from the Yankees, they flipped Drew Thorpe as the headliner of the Dylan Cease trade to the White Sox. So they turn Soto into Michael King and Dylan Cease. So yeah, they gave up a lot to Washington, but look at the aggressiveness. Look at the flexibility. Look at the stones on AJ Preller, people. So that's your top 10. And then I hear you saying, well, where are the Cubs? Well, number 11 is the New York Mets. And most people think that David Stearns of Milwaukee will soon be having Dodgers East, but they're not there yet. Number 12 is the Tigers. Former Cubs front office employee Scott Harris doing some stuff there. And by the way, the Tigers are rolling. Former team of the moment and a team that I thought a lot of good things were going to come out of. And so far it has. With Jack Flaherty, Jackson Jobe has been good. Casey Mize has been good. Spencer Torkelson has figured it out. Number 13 is the Astros, tied with the Rangers. Number 15 is the Twins. Number 16 is the Royals. Number 17 is the Mariners and Jerry DePoto, who's kind of a mini Preller in terms of his aggressiveness. Number 18, according to the poll, is the Red Sox under Craig Breslow, former Cubs director of pitching. Now their chief baseball officer. And oh, by the way, one of their co-owners is Theo Epstein. And you have to give some credit in terms of what that farm system has to Chaim Bloom and maybe Dombrowski before that. Number 19 on this list is a tie between the Cincinnati Reds and the Washington Nationals. Folks, the Cubs did not receive votes in this poll for the best front office in baseball. Neither did the White Sox. Neither did the Athletics, the Rockies, the Angels, the Marlins, the Pirates, the Cardinals, the Giants, and the Blue Jays. The Giants is an interesting one because Buster Posey's in charge there now. They've gone back to more of an old school type approach. But to me, the biggest story out of this thing locally is without a doubt the fact that the Cubs, according to the pollsters who are coaches and front office people from all around the league, do not rank in the top 20 front offices of a 30-team league. Woof. It's 670 The Score. I'm Matt Spiegel. This is Hit and Run. Bruce Levine will join us in the ballpark in about 20 minutes. We've got two callers. We're going to hang on. We're going to get back to you. So callers, hang on. Don't go anywhere. You'll be next as we discuss this. If you've got a front office that you covet, like I do the Padres, you can tell us at 312-644-6767. Doug Glanville, top of the hour on The Score.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game. Like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way. With stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today.
And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning. because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Welcome back in on 670 The Score. It is Hit and Run. Just went through the front office rankings in that Athletic piece. You can hop in and talk about that or anything else that's been on your mind. We'll check in with Bruce Levine shortly from the ballpark to see what the scene is like there. To Nick in Bloomington on The Score. What's happening, Nick? How are you?
Hey, good. How are you guys?
We're great. Thank you.
I wanted to chime in on this front office stuff with the Cubs.
Yep.
I mean, we look at Jed Hoyer, I mean, taking over for Theo Epstein. Look at Jed Hoyer's record when he was with the Padres. What did he do there? As soon as he left there, the Padres became relevant again. I mean, we talk about, we had years of clamoring about the Tribune being cheap and not spending money. We have an owner here that is getting put on blast by kids at the Cubs convention because he's cheap. He doesn't spend any money. He's essentially paying for all of the Wrigley renovations and not getting loans from banks. He's just basically not signing players. They put out a report that the Cubs made $578 million and he only spent $210 million. What does that tell you? This guy's cheap.
Yeah, I saw that report and that chart and an interesting write-up from Pat Mooney trying to contextualize it a little bit. There are certainly things we don't know on the books. It's very hard to tell, but that was a moment that came in stark clarity here. So, look, there's two separate issues that you're bringing up, and they often obviously get slammed together. Is the front office any good? And then is ownership willing to give the resources to do everything you need to do? And I think in some ways, Jed Hoyer and the Cubs front office is in an odd trick bag. Who's out there really trying to do what the Cubs are doing in the way they are doing it? In this sense, go ahead and spend, but not too much, right? Go ahead and spend right up to that first level of the tax. Last year, they just barely went over the tax. I think they were trying to trade Drew Smyly there at the end to try and maybe get under and didn't. So now this year, there's a desire not to go over. Although then they made the offer to Bregman and Jed talked about how that, you know, he appreciated the opportunity from ownership and things like that. But anyway, just zoom out a little bit. Who's hanging around at 200 mil, but not up to the tippity top? The Red Sox were there. The Red Sox and the Cubs were kindred spirits and kindred examples up until the Bregman moment when the Sox blew everybody out of the water and skyrocketed above the CBT and have given themselves a real chance for this year. It turns out the Cubs, as it is right now, you know, are looking awfully good. And that's the key. They're the team of the moment. That's how we led the show. It's how we'll close the show in terms of this moment. But if we're zooming out, the plan is a fairly unique one. The Braves, I think more the Braves than anything. And then the Braves locked up all their guys. And as long as those guys stay healthy and perform, but Spencer Strider didn't, did he? So then they went out and they got Chris Sale and you got to do stuff like that. You know, you got to find ways to plug those holes and see what you can do. But it's an interesting thing. But anyway, separate one from the other. In my mind, you need to. And there's a way that ownership could step up, and it's not that difficult to discern in terms of one particular guy. John is in Minnesota and is now on Hit and Run on The Score. Good morning, John. How are you?
Spiegs, I'm good. I always appreciate the intelligent baseball talk, and you make me think as a baseball fan every Sunday morning. I appreciate that. I think the front office thing is really damning, I think, to Carter and Jed, although I agree with you. I think they are in a tough bind. The thing I really wanted to talk about, though, was, you know, Theo back in 18 said the offense was broken. I think it took 7 years and Kyle Tucker to fix it. And I think the biggest thing, when you look at it, that he's done, I mean, this lineup is willing to take its walks, which I think teams, they've done in the past. But the difference is the swing decisions. You know, if there's a ball in the zone, you know, they're swinging at it. I think that's where Saya, the biggest difference, the frustrating thing with him over the years has been, hey, he would take a fastball right down the middle, and he hasn't done that as much this year. He has swung the bat, and he's I don't know what the percentage is, but I think his first pitch swings are a lot higher. So when you take swing decisions and guys on base with walks, and then the fact that they're an elite base running team, hey, it's fun, and I hope it continues. And I heard you say we deserve it, and I think we do because it's been frustrating over the last 7 years. I hope it continues. You know, they can continue to be that, because this makes up for some things in the bullpen and some starting pitching. Although starting pitching has been good, but it makes up for some issues.
Hey, thanks so much, John. Great call, as always. Yeah, you know, you're right about the swing decisions. Very much so. Because, yeah, they'll take their walks, but you also got to be ready to pounce. You got to be ready to ambush early in a count. If you have an opportunity, you got to do that. And it's not just Saya. It's interesting. The article on Michael Bush that I mentioned from Jordan Bastion over at MLB.com has a quote in there from Dustin Kelly about Michael Bush's recent performance. Quote, "There's some intent and confidence, recognizing the really good matchups for him and letting him know this is a guy you can take a shot off kind of helps him buy into this thought. Okay, I'm hunting right now, instead of just being up there waiting for a good pitch to come in." So that's from the hitting coach, Dustin Kelly, about Michael Bush recently. And that's really interesting to me, because Michael Bush is going up there looking to pounce. And when you watch Kyle Tucker, he's going up there looking to attack and pounce. The way that a lot of these guys talk about it, really, is like about this confrontation. It's like, I'm just trying to win every pitch, you know? Pitchers are trying to win every pitch with conviction, throw their thing, and just go right at you. Go ahead and try and win it. It comes down to like one after one after one. And instead of going up there and trying to work a count and hope you get a good pitch and then try to do something with it, just try to get a good pitch to hit, it you know, guys are not going to last a long time. And part of this is the evolution of the game, where you usually don't see a starter for that third time through the order these days. And if you do, you certainly don't see him for the fourth time through the order. So trying to work a guy and tire him out and do that kind of thing, it has become less important. I mean, it's interesting. There was a moment where the Red Sox and the Yankees and teams like that really had made pitches per plate appearance the defining stat.
I was just going to bring this up.
Right,
yeah.
The defining stat of their offensive excellence. And it was like just grinding it out. And then you'd get the soft, seamy underbelly of an opponent's pitching staff. You'd get that starter his third time through, or maybe his fourth time through, or you'd get their fourth best reliever. You know, and in those middle innings, you'd beat the hell out of them. And then by the time the late innings came around, maybe they didn't even use their closer, their setup man. Or if they did, you didn't need to do too much off them or whatever. And so how did baseball react? How did baseball react to that? By developing more and more setup and closer quality arms and throwing them at you in the sixth inning, in the seventh inning, sometimes the fifth inning. Having that guy. Remember when Madden started talking about the middle closer? Yeah, really need a middle closer. You need somebody to come out and finish an inning in the middle, you know, in the fifth or the sixth or what have you. And baseball also reacted by telling their starters, don't worry about going that late. Just max effort it. So then how do hitters react? They got to react. And maybe they've been slow on some levels. And maybe they've been trained their whole lives to take a lot of pitches. And now, if you got a good pitch, you pounce. You go. And Tucker does that, Saya does that, Bush does that. Attack. Go offensively. Let's go back to the phones. This is another Nick in Chicago on line one on 670 The Score. What's up, Nick?
Hey, I just wanted to bring up, it's not all Jed's fault. Theo, he exhausted the farm system on bad trades that didn't work out in a win-now mode. Quintana, Kimbrel, they didn't do anything, and Jed was left with no assets. And you can't hate Theo for it because he got the Cubs a World Series, but he did not leave the franchise in a good place.
Nick, that is fair to bring that up, because none of this is in a bubble. Like when DeColler was talking about Jed's time in San Diego, he was there for 2 years and he was instructed and had an ownership willing to let him do a rebuild. And so he started to do a rebuild and then he left before the thing really went anywhere. So context always matters. Theo went for it in the years following 2016, and there were some trades. there was some bad free agent money. Yu Darvish being a disaster in his first season here was such a big blow. I blame the cheating Astros. They might have won again in Darvish's first year here. If he was himself, they might have won again. But he wasn't, and it hurt. Obviously, the Brandon Morrow money was bad and some other stuff. And there were some trades where they got rid of some people, but there was also then the money shedding of non-tendering Schwarber and sending Darvish away for a bunch of prospects, one of which is Owen Casey, which still might have some promise, but really nothing that has helped you on the big league level to this point. Got rid of Yu Darvish and all that money for basically nothing that has helped you on the big league level at all. So, yeah, it was kind of barren. And there's, look, I've talked about this before. Theo and Jed McLeod and the way, Jason McLeod, I should say, and Jed Hoyer, the way that they did things in Boston, they came and did it that way here for a while, and then the game kind of evolved, and they won here, and maybe they took their foot off the gas a little bit, and the offense broke. Then Theo tried to fix it. Remember? Director of pitching, Craig Breslow, now running things in Boston. Director of hitting, Justin Stone. All right, let's change how we do things. And then Theo got out while the getting is good. And yes, somebody needs to write the book on this whole thing. And it might just have to be me. Might just have to step up and do it. But yeah, it does not happen in a bubble. And now Jed is building some things back up. And the farm system is built back up. And it is making a turn in the right direction. And that's why I was a little surprised to not see them anywhere in the top 20. That surprised me. I thought they would still be there. Because Jed is smart. Carter is smart. And they are doing some good things. Like Colin Ray is an organizational win right now. There have been bullpen pieces that are organizational wins. Without a doubt. And if they come out of the Javi Baez trade with Pete Crow Armstrong, as they have, that's a huge win. Need Kevin Alcantara to be a big league success, and that'll give you another one. Because the Bryant trade, not much there. From Killian and Canario, who are both now gone. Kevin Alcantara from the Rizzo trade would be a nice thing to have major league utility. One more before we take a break and talk to Bruce Levine. Walt is in Deerfield and is now on the score. Hey, Walt.
Yes, how you doing, sir? What I just do not understand, and maybe you can mention that to the gentleman coming on the air, the expert, is why doesn't the Cubs spend some decent money on a bunting coach of Richie Ashburn quality to teach PCA bunting? He just looks terrible. He's stabbing at it. Half the time he doesn't even make any contact on a bunt. If I was blessed with his speed, I'd be practicing bunting 1 hour every day till I got better. Maybe he ain't going to be Richie Ashburn, but he could be a hell of a lot better.
I love the idea. I love the impetus to call, Walt. He's terrible. He's terrible at bunting. I wish he would, if he was good at it, he could get himself, what, 2 hits a week? Something like that? Just add those in? But he seems to be a guy who kind of struggles to do both, like to swing, for some slug, and also to be able to bunt. He seems to sometimes get caught perhaps psychologically in between, and certainly physically he's not good at it. They got to teach that in the minors on the way up, though, don't you think, Walt?
Well, I definitely think they should, sir, but he's young enough to learn. Every successful bunt's a double. He's got to get better at it. Maybe he'll never be good at it, but he should be at least fair at it.
Did you see Richie Ashburn play in person, Walt?
I sure did.
Tell me.
Look, he had 3,000 hits. I don't know how many of them were bunt hits or scratch hits, but there was a hell of a lot of them, and he's in the Hall of Fame only because he learned how to bunt.
Well, he's 2,574 hits, so not quite 3,000, but 3 years with 200. You saw him play for the Cubs in 60 and 61?
I remember when he got traded to the Cubs, and he had, I don't know how many is that, maybe they don't keep records of that, but he had won a hell of a lot of bunts, and of course he bunts, they come in, he can slap it past them. I mean, it works both ways. It's just a tremendous skill, And like I said, he doesn't have to be Richie Ashburn. He just got to get better.
Do you have any memory as to who the Cubs traded for Richie Ashburn? January 11th, 1960.
Lord Almighty, that goes right by me. You'll have to educate me.
All right, John Buzzhart, Jim Woods, and Al Dark. Is that Alvin Dark who went on to be the manager? I think it is. That's,
yes, it had to be. Yeah, he was 1948 Rookie of the Year. I certainly remember Al Dark but these other guys. I remember all three players.
Sure.
There was no loss in losing the other guys, you know, but trading the other guys. But Ashburn was serviceable. He was a guy who could get on base. He always found a way to get on base and try to score for you. You're right. You're 100% right. They should teach that skill a little bit more in the minors, especially people where it'll really benefit. You got tremendous speed. You got to learn how to bunt.
Hey, man, thank you so much. Appreciate it, Walt. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. I love that. Come on, man. That's why I'm in the business. Let's go. Let's go. Yes, Texter. Richie Ashburn? Yes, Richie Ashburn. Absolutely. You respect Walt. Put some respect on Walt's name. Texture's on the front office. Matthew Boyd is a big move for Jed. I agree. That's a really good signing by Jed. And as long as Matthew Boyd stays healthy and looks like this, that is excellent. Another texture. Not trading for Verlander because he would cost too much, but then trading for Quintana. Other way around, they didn't trade for Verlander who wanted to be here. They traded for Quintana. Then when Verlander was theoretically available and wanted to come here, they had already given up Cease and Eloy for Quintana. And here's another. Oh, God, you mentioned Schwarber. That move is going to haunt the Cubs until he retires. Probably 400 home runs. Yeah, it's possible. All right, shout out to Richie Ashburn. Shout out to Bruce Levine, who's going to join us for a scene setter from Wrigley Field next. Doug Glanville at the top of the hour right here on 670 The Score.
PCA. PCA.
There's a drive to right going back as Carroll. Carroll cannot get it. It's off the wall and bounces halfway to the infield. Racing around third is Ian Happ getting the green light. Tucker going for three. He's got a triple. Ball game tied at one. Carroll got too close to the wall. Had the ball hit off of the solid bricks right behind the vines. The ball bounced halfway back to the infield. Tawa, the second baseman, had to scramble out. It took him several seconds to get there. Tucker running hard, gets a triple. Happ scores, ball game tied at one. Still nobody out, first inning.
Kyle Tucker with the triple, the call right here on 670 The Score from Pat Hughes. It is Hit and Run with me, Matt Spiegel, here with you, and we go out now to the ballpark, where joining us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline is our man Bruce Levine. Download the Circa app today. What do you say, Bruce? How are you?
How you doing, Matt? How's the show going so far? Sean told me that me coming on is the low light of the day.
Oh.
So we're going to have to do something about that.
I got one more hour. I can get lower than this. Is that a challenge, okay, Bruce? I can do it.
Well, you know, normally I'm the cooler. So.
No, we had Quentin Berry on today. I love talking to that guy. Oh, my God, is he fun.
He's made a difference. He sure has. I mean, good players matter. Good coaching is also a real big factor.
Yeah, you know, and he clearly is part of the personality mix in a way that Craig Counsell likes, wants, and knew him from his Milwaukee days. What was it like today down there? Vibes got to be good. They're the team of the moment right now, Bruce. That offense is for real, and this is two wins against a very good Diamondbacks team that came in here having won 7 out of 8.
So the conversation, you know, last year the conversation with Counsell for me was, hey, why do you expect to win when you have player development in center, first, third, and catcher? Okay, you have basically four first-year guys full-time at those positions. Amaya's first full year catching. Morrell never played third base full-time before. You had Armstrong. You had Bush. Okay, why would you expect to win with that when you're basically in player development for half of your team on offense? And he would push back and say, well, we're going to, you know, the players will get better. Well, they have. And that's been, that was the conversation today, is the light switch going on for the Bushes, the Amayas and the Armstrongs, watching their at-bats, watching them use the entire field, watching the opposite field approach yesterday by Armstrong, watching it all year long by Bush, who's turned into from a good player to possibly a really good player right now with a 999, you know, OPS. So with all those things happening, that's been the conversation, and it's been interesting to watch.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, in light of that, I have to then ask you about Matt Shaw, who was kind of handed the job, and it didn't work out, and now has been sent down. And, do you think it's on the table for Matt Shaw to have a development win, much like the three other guys that you're talking about?
Well, I think so. The only difference I see is they stuck with Armstrong last year through some really tough times, right, Matt? He wasn't good at the beginning of the year, giving away a lot of at-bats out in three or four pitches. And by the end of the year, we saw with him the same thing with Amaya, you know, with some adjustments and some time at the major league level, they've improved. So just thinking about the improvement of Shaw facing AAA pitching, what people think mostly that AAA is the furthest away it's been forever from pitching in the major leagues right now, is dominating there going to be really what Shaw has to do? Will that prove anything to them as to when he's ready to come up?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Let's listen to Craig Counsell from before the game yesterday, Bruce, on the advice that he gave Matt Shaw when they sent him back down.
Is like the best learning moments come when you have adversity, when you have struggles, and so this is an opportunity for you, and it's hard to look at it like that when, you know, you're getting told you're being demoted, but it's an opportunity. The game has told him, you know, he's got some exposure to a different level of baseball, and It's pretty good, right? And he struggled with it. You don't just abandon ship from if you're Matt's perspective. You take the information in and you learn from it. And that's what we're going to try to do. And he'll be successful at it.
What do you suspect the ask is for Matt Shaw as an organization down there?
Change the swinging leg kick that he has.
Really?
And really, I mean, again, it's not always, as Counsell said, Matt, it's not always just mechanical, right? You have to, timing is everything in hitting, okay? So his timing, when he can get to a ball and time it better, that's going to be the end result. I mean, you looked at Counsell during his career, and he had his arms held way up high before he went through his swing and got into the timing mode. He did it because he failed with other swings. I asked him about that yesterday, and he said, yeah, I use that as a way for a trigger for me to get through my swing and timing, catching up to the baseball. It was just a reminder. Everybody has to end up in the same zone when they're timing a baseball. They hit it properly, you know, whether it's 98 or 75, you know, it's all about timing. So with that in mind, you have to look at Shaw, and will some other mechanical thing help him get through to be able to hit major league pitching where he was sufficient or even a little bit better in the minor leagues last year at Double A and then in Triple A? Will that be good enough? So he has to come up with that. The organization has to be wary of changing him dramatically because he got to this level by being good with the swing that he had before. So you have to be a little bit careful about dramatic changes in the mechanics. But at the same time, you know, that leg kick might be something that he modifies.
In the short term, John Birdie yesterday, I mean, what are we going to see on the daily out there at third base? Do Bruhan and Workman continue to get opportunities? As I grab the lineup here today, I see it's Birdie once again.
Yeah, I think ultimately they'd like someone to win the job, right? But the workman thing is really wonky. How do you get your head around a kid that's only been at Double A, dominated in spring training? We know it's spring training. A left-handed bat with power, a decent third baseman, even though he made the ER the other day. They feel he's good there. But a Rule 5 that you have to keep on the roster all year, offer him back to Detroit for just about the same amount of money. What do you do with him? Can you afford, on a contending team like the Cubs, can you afford to have a 26-man that really doesn't have a spot and should be still working at the minor league level to develop some further skills, even at age 26? So it's a little bit of a dilemma, but I think, as Council said yesterday to that question, he said to me, yeah, you know what? Right now, we're trying to figure it out. But if that's the biggest problem we have for this team, we're going to be in really good shape.
Yeah, no, he's right about that. I wonder if that's the biggest problem or the bullpen. I really like, actually, the aggressiveness with which they're churning through some of the bullpen options. Figure it out. That's what April's for sometimes. Bruce, what do you think?
Yeah, and again, you know, I think because of the bullpen meltdown last year, you know, it's on everybody's mind that, okay, here we go again. We haven't solved the, you know, the question is Presley, and who's been actually very good the last three times out, is he the answer at the end? You know, do you move some of those other guys up? You know, are some of the guys waiting there to become the closer? Are you going to trade for Mason Miller, which would be a real nice answer to that? I mean, Matt, are you willing to give up two more farm system guys for 5 years of control of Mason Miller at this point?
I'm not, but I might be willing to do it for Sandy Alcantara when we get there.
Okay, and that's a great discussion. Yeah. Which is more important? I'll be going on Marquee in about 5 minutes, and we're going to talk about, if you have your choice, you can only give up certain revenue, money and player-wise. Is it the starting pitcher that's an ace, or a shutdown bullpen guy like Miller? And I think that's a great question, and it's one that Hoyer and company are going to have to answer here over the next month or two.
I knew Bruce before he was a big TV star. Thank you, sir.
Guys, have a great day.
Have a great day. That's Bruce Levine right there, host of Inside the Clubhouse, and much, much more. There's a little bit more of Craig Counsell on Matt Shaw that we'll play before we get out of here at the bottom of the hour, a little bit after the bottom of the hour. Cubs baseball coming up at 12:45. Our friend, my friend, the great Doug Glanville, joins us next to talk so much around MLB, plus Hall & Oates and Jackie Robinson and possible player strike. Who knows what we'll get to with Doug Glanville next on The Score.